afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, April 24th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
I'm Elodie.
Well, I think we'll talk about the election in France after the market report today. It certainly had a major impact, not in the positive manner, more in a negative manner, for gold after the French had their election yesterday. France had their election. But gold is actually having a nice little rebound from the lows of today. And that low today was 1266.60. You know, you just always have to, we have a grouping of three sixes that always kind of, but anyway, 1266.60 was the low today. And it clawed back to down 760 at 1277. So considering the pressures, I had no doubt, but silver did even a little bit better. Silver is now in the green. We had a low of 1763. And today we're looking in the spot price after market, New York, 1801. So a really nice recovery for silver. Platinum was down $10 today at $965. Palladium was up $3 at $802. The USDX today, of course, was lower as the euro climbed. The dollar was down 0.68 at 99.06. Crude oil was down 0.38 at 49.24. And, of course, the paper markets around the world has rejoiced. And let me look at those numbers. I have them here somewhere. I just can't locate them. I have too many things on my screen because I had too many things I want to talk about today. The Dow was up 216 points off its high, 20,764. The NASDAQ was up 73, 5983. And the S&P was up 25 at 2374. The 10-year yield up 0.04 at 2.27%. And the euro, of course, was up 1.31 at 109. Of course, if anybody watched any of the market reports for the European markets, I think France was up over 4%. You have Germany up almost 3.5%. London was up a little over 2%. So all the world markets rejoiced at the outcome of the French election yesterday. It was real interesting now because I was watching the 2 o'clock was the number, the final number started to come through, and I was watching Bloomberg. It was interesting because Bloomberg, I mean, you always have any type of number you ever want to know in the financial markets that's constantly being, you know, being shown on their screens. And yesterday, the only items that they showed was Friday's closes of our markets. They showed platinum Friday's close, and they showed, I don't know, some other commodity. I don't know if it was zinc or nickel or something, but something really stupid. And that's all they showed. To me, I thought that they didn't show any futures numbers. They didn't show, you know, any currency changes. I mean, nothing. There wasn't anything financial on the Bloomberg while they were interviewing various people and waiting for the election results to come through. So I thought that was really interesting because they wanted to have no impact on any of these markets.
Well, I don't know that they wanted no impact, but they didn't want an impact that would send gold higher. Presumably, if Le Pen had won instead of Macron, presumably, would have increased
the paper markets
the price
would have
of
dropped
gold.
500 points. So it wasn't just gold, it was the paper markets too. They didn't want to move any markets at all. And I just thought that was real interesting as they were giving these reports. So we can go ahead and we can, let's see. I don't know if you had any comments about that before I go into my comments.
Well, I don't know. There's an article from Ms. Shedlock talking about the election in France, and the winner was Emmanuel Macron. And the headline is, Can Macron Save the World, Save France? The markets appear giddy today over the election prospects of Emmanuel Macron in France. Equities are up, bonds are up, gold is down. Macron won the first round of the French election yesterday with 23% of the vote and will square off against Marine Le Pen, who won 21% in round two. They'll be running on May 7th for the final election. We've had the equivalent of the American primaries, where they had, if I understand correctly, four candidates.
Mm-hmm, they did.
Right? Now, that's interesting to me, because Macron won, hooray, with 23% of the vote, roughly a quarter of the vote, not quite. Le Pen came in second with 21% of the vote. She's only 2% behind him. This is not a clear... It's a victory for Macron, but it's not a mandate. she had 21%, and if there were two other candidates, they apparently also must have come in somewhere close to that 25%, because... Well, there may be alternative candidates that weren't serious, a bunch of people who didn't vote. I'm not sure how it all worked out.
But if you've got
four candidates, the average is 25%. And all Macron got is 23%. And Le Pen got 21%, which means France is divided. That's the implication here. No one has a clear mandate in the election. Right? That's the point, and that means this is not going. France will not be easily governed. Whoever wins on May 7th is unlikely to have a mandate. There are going to be plenty of people that are going to be opposed to him or her, whoever does win. And it indicates that France is headed for a lot of trouble. They've got a bunch of trouble, and they have not come to a consensus among the French people as to which way they want to go. And the question becomes, and will either one of the parties, whoever gets elected, will they be able to implement their policies? They may have some interesting ideas, but will they be able to overcome the opposition? And the answer is maybe not. Macron policies, there's a description of Macron's policies. Remake the failed and vacuous French political system. Remake the system. You understand that? He's a radical in his own way. He wants to relax labor laws, cut business taxes, reform unemployment system, encourage social mobility, cut public spending, shrink the public sector, reduce the number of MPs, establish Eurozone government, hire 10,000 more police gendarmes. But he wants to stay in the European Union. He is a globalist who advocates more privileges for businesses in broad strokes. He says the challenge this evening is not to vote against a person, but to decide to break completely with a system that has been incapable of responding to our country's problems for 30 years. He wants to trash the internal French government, remake it dramatically in order to make it more responsive to reality. And I'm sure he's motivated by, we've all heard jokes about the French get 2 hours for lunch and they only work 4 days a week or something. I don't know how much of that is true or false. I don't know how extensive that problem, but that's part of what he's undoubtedly complaining about. Le Pen, she, on the other hand, she wants her policies are priority for French nationals in jobs, housing, and welfare. Extra tax on foreign workers and imports. Proportional representation in parliament. Negotiate with the European Union for return of full sovereignty, including the franc. She wants to bust out of the European Union, all right? But she also wants to remake the internal French government to some degree. She wants to hire 15,000 new police. Macron only wants 10,000, and she wants to create 40,000 more prison places, all right? She wants to jail more people. She wants to get tough. She says the French people have a very simple choice. Either we continue on the path to complete deregulation or you choose France. So she's a nationalist who wants to break out of the European Union and control or prevent Muslim immigration. Both of these, what this reminds me of is Greece. They have some kind of cultural problems that have been building for 30 years. And they have now put them in a position where they're in great jeopardy. All right. And this is a lesson for all of us, including those of us in the United States. You can behave as fools, absolute fools, for several generations in a nation and get away with it, but the day comes when there's going to be a reckoning. They're seeing it in France, they've seen it in Greece, and we're going to see it in this country too. We have played the fool. You know, we have gone along with programs that were stupid, contrary to our best interests. We have been conned and deceived and self-deluded. But regardless of who's elected in France, France is already decades deep in serious trouble and headed for more trouble that neither candidate will have enough power to divert. Whoever's elected will probably be blamed for a coming French debacle.
Well, they already have difficult financial situations. Le Pen, I heard, basically lost Paris. So she was really winning on the countrysides, and pretty much she lost Paris. Mm-hmm. But the other two candidates, Fillon and Mélenchon, one had 20%, the other one had 19%.
Okay.
But both of those are establishment.
Yep.
And so those people who voted for them will vote for Macron.
Probably.
So, yeah. So
probably.
She really does. It's highly unlikely
she's going to win.
But also, what's interesting is this Macron. He was a protege of Hollande, and Hollande has an approval rating of 4%. So it's also kind of interesting to see how the French people would support Hollande's protege when Hollande has a 4% approval rating. Macron is, and I'm sure I'm not having the French accent, he's a former Rothschild banker globalist who married his high school French literature teacher. He worked as his high school French literature teacher. Macron has worked at Hollande's Hollande's economic advisor, and he was later appointed by Hollande as Minister of Economy and Finance. France has a very high youth unemployment problem, a record 25%, a record high 25% for youth unemployment since and so they say it's no surprise that the 40% of the youth in France actually support Le Pen.
Uh-huh.
But listen to the numbers of the GDP of France. It has increased from 2.325 billion at year end 2006 to 2.4 billion at year end 2016. So for a total 10-year growth, it's less than 6%. Compare that to like California, who's seen its nominal GDP increase from 1.8 billion at the end of 2006 to 2.59 billion at the end of 2016, for a total 10-year growth of 37%. This is the situation of France. In 2008, France's economy was 47% larger than California. Today, it's almost 5% smaller. So they've got major problems, major problems in France. And what's going to change if Macron gets in there? It's going to be establishment.
They will try to justify it, but they're going to corner people. I mean, there's so much polarization in France right now. But if someone isn't lucky or blessed, whoever gets elected is going to preside over some real serious civil disobedience in France. There could be riots in the streets. There could be burning buildings. There could be serious trouble over the course of the next several years, because I guarantee you some of these people are going. It's like our own election. We got the left is the Democrats are furious that Trump won, and they've acted out in some instances of violence and rest, that sort of thing, that surprised a lot of us. All right? I think you're going to see the same thing and maybe a lot worse in France after May 7th. I don't mean May 8th or May, but sometime after we get the new president in there, they're going to do what they want to do for a while. It isn't going to work. They're not going to be able to solve the problems. And no matter what you do, how do you solve these problems that they're facing right now without taking money away from some people who've been living at the trough for the last 30 years? There are institutions, labor unions, for example, that have been grown fat over public policy in France. You're not going to say, listen, we've got to do the right thing here, boys. And the unions are going to say, well, okay, we understand that, so you just cut our pay as much as you think is necessary. They're not going to do that. They're going to be throwing rocks and bottles and Molotov cocktails before they give up what they think is theirs. All right? And what are they going to do? This is part of what I was talking about in the beginning of this earlier. You know, you embark on these idiotic programs. You should be able, and some people concede at the beginning, this is going to work. This is not going to work out. This is going to be trouble. And everybody laughs and says, oh, that's 20 or 30 years from now. We don't have to worry about that. Right now, we get a free lunch. And people go for it. But the day comes when you got to pay for that lunch. There is no free lunch. There is buy now and pay later. It appears to be free because you're not paying now. You're getting the lunch. But the day comes, somebody's got to pay for that lunch. And that's what's happening in France and has happened in Greece and will happen here in the United States. We have decades of stupidity behind us, and we're going to pay a big price for that.
I wonder, there's two things, and I don't really doesn't make that much difference, but, you know, there was momentum behind the Brexit, there was momentum behind Trump, and Le Pen picked up a lot of that momentum. And I wonder if after the election here in the States, and the way the media has treated the administration and the bad reporting and so forth, I wonder how much of an impact that had on her negatively, with people in France thinking, oh, Lord, we're going to get somebody in there. That's a populist. Look at what's happening over in the U.S. We don't want that. So, you know, so I wonder how much of his momentum was a positive at first. And then once he was inaugurated and certainly his first 100 days, how much of an impact has that had as a negative on her campaign? And
I don't really know.
I don't think there's any way that she'll be able to tell. But, you know, you do have to believe, because there was a lot of connection to both campaigns.
I think right now France is like a hornet's nest, and they can argue that if you hit it with a stick and you turn it in a clockwise direction, that's what makes the hornets mad. Or, and then other people say, no, if you turn it counterclockwise, that's what makes the hornets mad. And I'm thinking, look, they got a bunch of hornets here, and they are mad already, and they don't care which way you turn the stick, and there's no easy solution. France has painted itself into an untenable corner, and they're not going to get out of that without a lot of trouble. So
it remains to be seen how upset the people really are. I mean, she's had good momentum, but she only
But nobody's done again. And four candidates, and nobody got over 23%. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What do you think is going to happen to the price of gold tomorrow, Melody?
It'll be up.
I think so, too.
It'll be up.
I think the effect that we're seeing out of France right now
is... This is a knee-jerk reaction.
I understand that. And the point behind that is that suggests that today might be a good day to buy gold.
And what I did do, I had someone call this morning for Friday's special. I readjusted the special. It was a $50 face value of 90% silver with a mint state 62 $20 gold piece. Friday's it was 2060. I changed it to 2040. Prices are moving back up. You can still get it at the lower price today and save yourself $20 at $2,040. That includes your shipping cost. So $50 face value of 90%. And a mint state 62 $20 gold piece for $2,040 and includes your shipping costs. There's just two things I wanted to talk about, Al. And one was today you have there was a meeting with the president and the UN Security Council, and Trump said that the UN Security Council must be prepared to impose new sanctions on North Korea amid these escalating tensions. And he said that people had acted as if they blindfolded for decades on a big problem that finally needed to be solved. He says the council must be prepared to impose additional and stronger sanctions on North Korea nuclear and ballistic missile programs. Chinese President Xi Jinping earlier called for all sides to exercise restraint in a telephone call about North Korea with Trump. Japan has conducted exercises with the U.S. aircraft carrier strike group that is headed for the Korean waters. Angered by the approach of the USS Carl Vinson carrier group, a defiant North Korea, if the carrier group ever gets there, but a defiant North Korea, which has carried on nuclear missile tests at a defiance, said on Monday the deployment was an extremely dangerous act by those who plan a nuclear war to invade. The United States should not run amok and should consider carefully any catastrophic consequence from its foolish military provocative act. The official newspaper of North's ruling Workers' Party had said in a commentary today. We also have today in Washington, you have the entire U.S. Senate that is going to the White House for a North Korea briefing. And I do believe that one of those meetings, I'm not sure if it was the U.N. Security Council or with the Senate, that it is behind closed doors and very private. So it's coincidence of both meetings on the same day involving North Korea. It seems like we're going one step closer to some sort of a possible situation occurring.
Well, you got to wonder what Trump is up to when he approaches the UN and saying you need to impose more sanctions. Is Trump trying to back away? Is he trying to get the UN to do something? All right, and while he kind of backs away from acting in North Korea, or is he just trying to round up political support for what he thinks he's going to do in any case in North Korea? You know, it's a mystery. Mystery, and who knows?
Well, I think China is playing a bigger part in this than perhaps than what we have been led to believe, because China has also mentioned that they want everything done by the UN's book. So I think this is why, one of the reasons perhaps, that Trump did bring in the UN, and it shows who is calling the shots, seems to be China. And when it comes to North Korea. So,
well, maybe the Trump just wants to go to the UN and try to get them to do something. And if they say no, we're not going to do anything, then he's going to go back and say, China, look, I tried, you know, and now we got to do this thing. All right, and it is an extraordinary event because we have Russian soldiers on the few miles that North Korea butts up against Russia. We've got Chinese soldiers on the part of the North Korean border that butts up against China. America's coming. South Korea, God knows what's going on down there. We have the three major nuclear powers in the world. Well, it are probably. I'm assuming China is one of the three in the top. But China, Russia, United States, North Korea. I mean, North Korea is a minor situation in this practically. Got a lot of very important heavy hitters in a relatively small space. And it was something, you know, it's certainly a dangerous situation. And it just seems to be amping up and up. And it's not modified by... President, the North Korean president, Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-un. I'm going to call him Kim for
sure.
Just
call him Kimmy.
I'm going to call him Kim.
Hey, Kimmy.
Right. But in any case, there's one in the Post that says North Korea threatens U.S. warships. Trump administration made it clear that this new U.S. government won't tolerate North Korea ramping up its nuclear weapons program. Donald Trump has said the U.S. will punish North Korea appropriately with or without China's help. He ordered the Carl Vinson to sail the Korean Peninsula. Two Japanese ships have joined the U.S. fleet. They say the U.S. fleet, but according to some reports, they've only got two other U.S. warships with the Carl Vinson. Three ships does not an armada make, in my opinion. But now they've added two Japanese destroyers, which means Japan is putting itself in a position to where they can get smacked. I mean, Korea may or may not be able to reach out to the United States, but it can certainly reach Japan. Japan could get smacked over this deal. And President Kim Jong-il, he's detained another U.S. citizen. On Sunday, they've got three all together that they're holding. It's not a big deal on one level, but on the other hand, it is the kind of political act that is bound to make Americans to some degree angry. Who does this guy think he is grabbing Americans over there? And maybe they're CIA agents. I don't know who they are. I don't know who they really are. But point is, Kim is threatened to show off its military prowess. He claims he's combat ready to sink a U.S. nuclear-powered aircraft carrier with a single strike. I mean, he's not backing down. He's not doing much to walk away from this and say, let cooler heads prevail. I don't know. What do we got here, Melody? A bunch of crazy people? Can you be a leader, a national leader anymore without being half nuts?
Huh? I don't know.
You start looking around, you start asking the question. You know, actually, the answer may be no. You've got to be crazy to become a national leader. And you kind of look around at the other countries and say, you know, maybe there's a point to that. Maybe we could get all these guys that are elected to public office and we could get them all into therapy. We're on a little island out in the Pacific and we give them some therapy.
But the world is a crazy place. Maybe you have to be crazy in order to be the leader. Just so you
maybe so. The inmates are taking over the nut house. That's what's coming. That's what's happening here.
I just saw this headline, and this actually happened on Saturday, and this is totally different from what you're talking about. But this is really shocking. This has happened on Saturday, and we're just now getting wind. In San Francisco, maybe you heard it. Maybe I'm just the only one that hasn't. There was a takeover of their train. 40 to 60 teens swarmed a train. They robbed and beat the riders. Dozens of juveniles, they swarmed an Oakland station over the weekend and commandeered a train car, forcing passengers to hand over bags, cell phones, and leaving at least two of them with head injuries. And... I mean, you talk about crazy.
You know what? What's the lesson there? You need licensed to carry firearms. When the kids know, I don't know what the situation is in San Francisco, but I'm going to assume, and I could be mistaken, I'm going to assume that it is very rare for anyone to be permitted to carry a firearm in San Francisco.
But the thing of it is, you know, they've had these robberies before. It's like, well, you know what? They're not doing anything to stop the little robberies, you know. Hey, it was just one person maybe that got robbed, no big deal. And now this is what you have. So again, it's law and order. You know, no one has taken care of the problems, of the little problems, and they're growing into these big problems. This is really, I don't know, it's shocking to me.
I'll tell you what you need. It's unfortunate, it's sad, but it's the way the world works. A couple of those kids got themselves shot trying this stunt in the railroad car, and next thing you know, a bunch of kids are saying, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to play with my Xbox. I'm not going to go rob any trains. It's unfortunate. I don't know. And on one hand, you're dealing with kids will be kids. All right? I was listening to one guy talk about, was being interviewed, the guy's 65 years old now or something. He comes across like he was a young gangbanger back in the day, right? Italian guy, back in Brooklyn, I think, in New York. And he said, I was a gangster back then. But he said, all kids are gangsters. And there's a certain point to that. Kids, especially boys, when they're 16, 14, 18 years old, they have a natural tendency to get out and get involved in some kind of adventure. It's not violence in the same sense you think about wickedness. It's kids sometimes just being kids, and you don't want to advocate shooting the little monsters. But on the other hand, sometimes it's the only way they learn.
Well, no, if they understand, they're not dumb. No, I'll tell you what. On this article, it says, oh, well, we were going to take the surveillance video, and we're going to share it with the police, but we can't share it publicly. Why not? Why not show those images on the 5 o'clock news and show these little kids to everyone so everybody knows who they are?
Well, they're going to argue that the children have some right to privacy as minors and the rest of that sort of thing.
You lose some of your rights.
Well, I agree, and here's one of the things about it. It might even keep those kids alive. It might even keep those kids alive if mom is looking at the video and saying, well, Junior, that's you. You told me you were going to the library and you're involved in this. She could beat the crap out of her son and teach him a lesson that just might keep him from getting involved in the next instance where somebody's going to get killed, maybe him.
No, you can't beat your kids anymore, Al. You go to jail, but you can pull them by the ear and take them down to the police station and get them arrested.
Well, that's another possible rationale for what's
going on. There are things that
the kids think they can get away with whatever they want to do because they can't get beat up.
What's going to happen,
can't get
though,
shot, can't get
is
beat
this
up.
Will, one of these days, these robberies will take hostages, and it will lead into, you know, some sort of a more violent situation where some of them will get hurt. So, but it's just shocking. 40 to 60, that's a lot.
Yeah, I know. They're going to have to make a special plaque to put on each one of their little railroad cars, each one of their subway cars. It says, occupancy by more than 5 people under 18 is illegal. You're coming in a group, you got to put people in every one of the cars. You can't get 40 to 60 of them in just one or two cars.
You know, we hear more and more. We talk about retailers going bankrupt at a record pace as they're trying to cope with supposedly online shopping. In a little over 3 months, 14 chains have announced that they will seek court protection. This is according to an analyst, S&P Global Market Intelligence. Few retail segments have proven immune as discount shoe sellers, outdoor good shops, and consumer electronics retailers have all found themselves headed for reorganization. And it goes on and saying, you know, it breaks them down into the Urban Outfitters. There are just too many stores. My question is it really online shopping that is destroying these retailers? I don't think it is. That might be part of it, but I truly believe it's more the economy. You've had these retailers. Look at the amount of building that had gone on in the early 2000s, in late 90s, 2000s. You've had all these strip malls built. You've had, you know, you've had multiple, you know, stores opening, franchises, all of these. It was totally overbuilt. Now the economy, sure, they might be going online, but you don't have the local strong economy supporting these stores any longer. So I don't think it's just
people
are going shopping online. I think it was overbuilt, and the local economies, the jobs aren't there, wages aren't rising. We know the difficulties people are having, and I don't think the money is there to support the retail. I want them, and I think they use this online selling as a way, as propaganda, making people think, oh, things are great, people are just buying online, buying billions and billions and billions. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's I think there's a lot more.
It has more to do with maybe the idea of John Williams at ShadowStats.com has calculated, while the government claims the unemployment rate is less than 5%, he thinks it's really over around 23%.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Maybe that's what's really funding. Maybe a bunch more people are unemployed than what the government cares to admit. And if we face that unemployment problem, we would have an explanation for why people aren't buying things. Why? Because they don't have any money. Why? Because they don't have a job. I mean, what this gets down to, really, it becomes, it may be very fashionable and undoubtedly correct to some degree that the online buying is making a difference. But is it really destroying those brick-and-mortar stores, or are they being wrecked by government mismanagement of the economy?
I think that's the bigger problem. And then people go online because they're so broke, because their dollar isn't, you know, going as far as they need it to go. They do go there to search for a lower price.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, we certainly have seen the credit card numbers, the you know, that's over $1 trillion as far as them using their credit cards and stuff. And, you know, that's all part of it. It's showing that they don't have the incomes. They don't have the wages. They don't have the disposable income in order to shop locally and to support their community. So bigger picture than just, the online retailers.
Well, it's easy to blame on technology because technology doesn't really have one person to blame. But when you start to look at it, maybe you can blame it on the government. And to the extent that's true, we have Republicans, we have Democrats, we have presidents. They are responsible. Take a break, a couple more commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
I need to learn the golden rule. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, you know, Venezuela, I mean, they're really beginning to react down there. A lot of strange things are happening. I think it was last week they seized General Motors, its assembly plant.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what story you read. You know, in one story you'll read that it was seized, and in another story it was, you know, wasn't seized. And so, which means there's probably both are true.
It was only
true.
Embargoed. Oh. They say, we didn't seize it. We've just embargoed it, you see? And you'd have to understand the difference between the meaning of the word seized and the meaning of the word embargoed. And these are sophisticated terms that politicians understand how to use these things. And ordinary people just say it was seized.
Like restructuring.
But you know what? I don't have any sympathy for GM on one level. I mean, they wanted to...
No, I don't.
They want to relocate their factories to where they can get cheap labor. Well, good. Have fun with it.
The point of it was what is happening down there. I mean, there's not a lot of... and you're right. You know, I agree about GM. But the point is that they're having major problems down there.
Oh, yeah.
That is just another sign showing what they do.
And down to where they only have $10 billion in reserves right now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cash intended to keep the economy weathering stable and allow them to weather tough times. Previously, they had let me see, I'm looking at a report here. They had $30 billion in cash reserves back in 2011. As recent as 2015, they had $20 billion. They're now down to $10 billion. They've lost, basically, in about a year's time, they've lost $10 billion of what they had. It suggests they're going to lose. They're going to be out of Schlitz and or cash reserves within perhaps by the end of this year. All right, 12 months from now, maybe the first quarter next year. But
they still have some gold, though.
Yeah, they have some gold. Yeah, they have $7 billion in gold bars. But it says what's worse. This article is from CNN Money. Venezuela only has $10 billion left in reserves, and so they're talking about these tough times. What's worse, most of those reserves aren't in hard cash. About $7 billion is in gold bars, which doesn't make it easy to make payments. CNN Money is most of those reserves aren't in hard cash. You mean hard fiat currency, paper dollars, digital dollars? They're complaining that $7 billion is in gold bars, which doesn't make it easy to make payments. Are you crazy? You can't make payments with fiat currency. You can only discharge your debt. You can't extinguish it. You can only extinguish your debt. You can only make real payments with gold or silver. I mean, CNN is, I don't know, it's just one of the bizarre statements. It's like, my God, who's writing this stuff? NEK business, Venezuela, lots of bills to pay. It owes $6 billion in debt payments for the rest of this year. Their lone source of revenue is oil exports. There are the risk of defaulting. If they do, they won't be able to get more loans to pay for basics like food and medicine, which are in scarce supply. I mean, how stupid is that? If they default on existing debt, they won't be able to go deeper into debt to pay for the stuff they really need, like food. People are going to don't feed them. They starve. And they're saying the key to their problem is they must be able to borrow more. And I'm saying, look, somebody should have been thinking all along while they were living large on oil exports. Someone should have been thinking about how they're going to run their economy in a productive manner. They lost the ability to even grow their own food. They were importing much of their food, maybe most of their food. As a result, they kind of lost the ability to farm in their country. And now all of a sudden the stuff has hit the wall and they are going to starve to death. They're going to riot. They're going to bomb. They're going to shoot. They're going to do all this stuff. And they're going to run out of their $10 billion, their remaining $10 billion in reserves, and hope they can get more loans. No, you don't need more loans. You need more productivity. And this is another example. We talked about this in Greece. We talked about it in France. Talked about it in the United States. You engage in stupid, idiotic government policies for several decades, and the next thing you know, you have very, very nearly destroyed your country. And what's common in all of these government policies? The determination that government should be here to provide free lunches for anyone who has an appetite or would like to eat something. Venezuela has provided free lunches for the Venezuelan people for a couple of decades, right? They've lived large off the oil exports. Then the oil industry collapsed. Well, I won't say collapsed, but it suffered a serious decline. And now they're caught. What are they going to do? How are they going to feed themselves? They have become leftists. They have become communists and socialists to a degree where they are as ignorant as, what the hell, what was the name of those? My friend had one of those dogs, a red spaniel. Can't think of it. Irish spaniel. No, Irish something. I can't. Irish setter, maybe. Haven't seen one in years. But they were so inbred, they became so dumb they couldn't feed themselves. And that's what happens when you let communist, socialist, collectivists take control of your government. They have these brilliant ideas that we're going to feed the people and they don't even have to work for it. And in the end, it comes back to haunt you, bite you, and maybe even destroy your nation. And Venezuela is going to face a dose of that. And part of the reason this is an important article, Venezuela down there in South America, it's not the most important place in the world and the rest of it. And
used to be one of the powerhouses.
Yeah, I get that.
Used to be one of the powerhouses.
Well, it's not right now, but my point nevertheless is that if they have real trouble in Venezuela, if it really blows up down there, can we be sure that there won't be adverse consequences that come back to haunt the people of other countries, including the United States? When we have this global system, all right, new world order, global government that they're trying to impose, global free trade, we've got this global system. All right, fine. Going to have a global system. I don't like the idea, but if you, to the extent we have one, we are all interconnected, interdependent, and intervulnerable. If something happens in Venezuela and it really blows up, what's going to happen to the United States? Probably nothing. But what happened? What if Uganda blows up, or France blows up, or Italy blows up, or China? They've got as much instability in their own way as any place else. I mean, we are all caught in a situation right now where there is so much interdependence that we could have a black swan flying in from any direction, including Venezuela, that could be enough to precipitate a very serious problem in the United States, which is already extraordinarily vulnerable. We're so far in debt, we're never going to pay the debt off. Before that's resolved, there's going to be trouble, unlike anything modern Americans have seen in this country in their lives. You have to see the kind of trouble that may be headed our way could be comparable to the Civil War. So we'll watch and we'll see. So I'm just wondering what's going on in Venezuela. It's interesting, but there's lessons to be learned. And some of them are you can't be a collectivist idiot. You actually have to support yourself. And on top of that, you have to live within your means. Meaning you can't just borrow more and borrow more and borrow more and just keep on spending and having a good old time. If you can't earn it, you can't pay for it, don't buy it. Those are lessons that no one wants to hear. That's that doesn't sound like any fun, I'm sure. And yet there are lessons we are going to learn. You're going to learn them. I mean, there's people out there still who want to be able to shop till they drop. Well, you watch and see. You're going to drop. Then you're going to see if you can shop till you can get up. And the answer is you won't be able to do that. World is changing. Coming at us. Problems headed our way. And I just can't see how we're going to escape. And it's not just trying to promote. I'm certainly not trying to I'm not trying to promote fear per se. I'm not trying to doom and gloom. I'm just saying, look, you know, if you see one of the wheels come off your car, it's time to slow down. It's time to change. Get a new auto mechanic. Learn to keep the wheels fastened on your car yourself. I mean, there's something change has got to be made. And I'm just pointing, look, one of the wheels is gone. I think another one is on the verge of falling off too. Lessons, you know, to be learned.
You know, in previous recessions and problems that this country has seen, and even other places around the world, I mean, they were fairly quiet. You know, there wasn't the anger and the frustration and the unrest that we see in today's world. I mean, it is a different time today than it was, you know, even the recession of 2008. Yeah, you had the Wall Street, you know, people there, the Tea Partiers. But I mean, even that was a quieter time. And yet, what has happened? It's only the signs that are exhibiting the anger and the frustration and the violence that we see around this country and around the world. What do you think is going to happen when, you know, that black swan hits and drops to the ground? It is frightening.
Yeah, I know.
It is frightening.
Yeah, and it's not a question of fear-mongering. It's telling people, look,
it's reality.
This is what it appears to be reality. All right, we can go around and pump sunshine. We're on the Titanic. We can pump sunshine and tell you this ship is unsinkable. Don't worry about a thing. Just go on and have another drink in the clubhouse or whatever. And some people are saying, wait a second, we've hit an iceberg. We've got a big hole in the side of the boat. It actually looks like maybe this thing is going to sink. And other people say, oh, you can't sink this thing. I think maybe you can. And even if it's true that we are on some sort of an unsinkable vessel, maybe, the possibility still exists that maybe it is sinkable. And there's certainly enough evidence. You can look around and you can find enough evidence all on your own to say, yeah, this is, looks like, wow, looks like we're in trouble here. All right, fine. Then do something about it. All right? If you can see it, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying the ship is going to sink. But I'm saying it certainly could.
Do you know what, Al? I've seen large cruise ships and so forth that have run aground. Maybe mm-hmm. they didn't sink, but you know what? Part of it did. And a lot of lives were lost. Maybe not all of them, but there's still life was lost. So you don't have to sink 100% like the Titanic. You can still be going there, just, you know, like the one tire. You don't have to have a major crash if just one tire comes off. But you lose two or three or four, yeah. Well, then you're in big trouble. But
And that's where we are right now. And I don't think you can find anyone who will talk to you honestly about the condition of the economy in this country today, the economy in this country, the economy of the world. Who will tell you honestly, not pumping sunshine, who will tell you honestly that we're not vulnerable, we're not fragile, we're not in danger? I don't think anybody can say that to you honestly. Everybody knows it. We can feel it. We can sense it. We just don't know when. You know, the light's going to go out. We just don't know when it's going to happen, and we don't know if the light's going to be out for 30 minutes or 10 years. It's hard to say. We don't know. But
and the sad part now, as long as that light bulb is on, people aren't going to worry. People don't seem to care.
Yeah, I know.
Like, hey, it, as far as I'm concerned, it might be flickering a little bit, but it's not out yet. It's like, okay. You know, and I think our lives have become so... You know, there's so much distraction and busy in people's lives. They can't slow down. And it's they will be forced to slow down, and then they will regret that they didn't slow down.
We've got Congress's 4 days to avert a debt crisis that's coming up in the next 4 days. The only reason it has yet to result, this is an interesting article from Paines, Gaines, and Capitals, and they make a very interesting insight. The U.S. has hit its debt ceiling. You know, people are concerned, oh, my gosh, we're going to hit the debt ceiling in a couple of days. No, we already hit it 18 months ago or thereabouts. and they decided they wouldn't deal with it, and they would use extraordinary measures to just kick the can down the road. We've already hit the debt ceiling 18 months ago, but Congress got around it by employing extraordinary measures to keep the markets functioning. These measures end this Friday. Put differently, Congress now has 4 days to resolve the budget in order to avert a debt crisis. This is the same budget that features, one, Trump's border walls, two, funding for sanctuary cities, three, Obamacare subsidies. Any one of these are deal breakers for different factions of Congress. And don't forget that we're dealing with a situation in which various political factions will gladly torpedo legislation based on their agenda. We have 4 days, and they think they're going to avoid this government shutdown, and we're going to deal with this debt ceiling. We're going to deal with this before maybe the end of this week. Do you think so? I don't think so. And that's the point of this article. And it's a nice insight to recognize, my God, they've already hit the debt ceiling. This is equivalent to boarding the Titanic after it's already hit the iceberg. Yeah, it's still floating. It didn't sink right when it hit the iceberg. So I guess everything's okay, right? Maybe not. Maybe we've already got troubles here that are not going to be easily resolved. We all need to think about it, need to prepare for it. If you agree with that idea, give Melody a call at 1-800-375-4188. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom. We're out of time on Financial Survival. Be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer.
And happy birthday, Al.
Thank you, Melody. I'll be old enough to vote.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.